Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I'm Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike McGuigan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing? Sorry if
And
my
as
voice
usual.
is a little bad. I've been yelling at the Phillies all weekend.
Yeah, haven't we all? And as you know, we are two dudes who drink. We talk about movies. We yell at the Phillies. And we talk about two legendary movies on Easter night. So, did you beat up the Easter Bunny today with Silent Bob, Mike?
I did.
You're supposed to. It's an annual tradition that we
I
should
actually
all
did it
do.
at Citizens Bank Park. There was an Easter bunny
Oh,
there.
nice, nice. Yeah, I mean, if you're already in Citizens Bank, odds are you're going to get in a fight anyway. So you might as well beat up the Easter
I was
Bunny.
wearing a Braves jersey, so like I
Oh,
didn't even
fuck him
have to
then. Yeah,
explain myself.
ah, fuck that dude. Fuck him. He knows what he did. But what player was it? Was it Spencer Strider? Because if it was Strider, you fucking kick his ass. You just curb stomp that asshole.
No, it was Oh God, what's Chipper Jones?
Oh, even worse.
Yeah,
Not even an active player, and yet one of the more hated players. So, yeah, fuck that Easter Bunny. You know, this is for Brody, man. You know, but all right. So we're talking about, like I said, two legendary movies. We're talking about Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa and Magnificent Seven by some dude who I have not bothered to look up. Oh, let's look. Let's see. The Magnificent Seven. Okay, just John Sturges. I'm sorry. Yeah, legendary director John Sturges. But yeah, it's fun to call him some dude though, because if you look up his picture on Wikipedia, he just looks like some dude. You know, he
Yeah.
looks like Frank Grimes if he was some dude. But yeah, so we Mike and I spent a total of 8 hours watching movies, it feels like,
Oh
for these two.
this was a long one.
These are long ones. And before we talk about those, we gotta talk about what we're drinking. So, Mike, what do you got?
I'm doing another Japanese whiskey episode. It's appropriate with Seven Samurai.
Of course, of course.
So I got two different Japanese whiskey here. I have Fuji single grain Japanese whiskey, 46 proof, comes from the Mount Fuji Distillery. I didn't get to go in, but I was right near there when I went to Japan.
Okay. It's got his little tiny glass.
That's it's like a very clean, crisp whiskey. Like you could tell that that water came from like a mountain lake or something.
It's not polluted like every water that's used around here, you know.
And my other whiskey I have is the first edition Kaya Whiskey the Ruby. So it is a Japanese Mizunara oak cask that it was aged in.
Sure. Now, what makes that? Is that like Kentucky bourbon barrel aging for them?
So I've had another whiskey that was Mizunara oak. It's kind of it's almost like aging it in like a like you get different flavors from different wood, kind
Oh,
of.
okay. Yeah.
So that's just kind of a flavor profile thing. And
It's
it's
like,
46%, and it is from the distillery is in Osaka, so I might have been near there too.
nice, yeah. And even though I don't think we don't get an actual location in this, in Seven Samurai, but Osaka was big in the samurai age and all that, so it's definitely appropriate locale wise as well.
Yeah, the Mount Fuji one might be more appropriate because it's mountain bandits that they're dealing with in the small village.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it goes to the takeover of the farmers, and then of course it's good old allegedly American dudes against the Mexicans in the Magnificent Seven. That age old tale.
Yeah, both of these whiskeys are excellent. Taste-wise, I like the Fuji a bit better, but bottle-wise, I like the Kayo because it's actually got a cork. Most
Oh.
Japanese whiskeys I've tried don't have a cork.
Nice. All right. Do they block it up with a katana sword?
That would be awesome. Like
That would be fucking great.
a
But they
mini
got like,
katana, you have to unsheath the
dude, that'd be fucking awesome. Like you have to kill somebody with it too.
katana.
Like, That'd be awesome. Like, that's like they got Cobra whiskey, like where they got fucking cobras in whiskey. Why can't they have a katana as a cork? I don't understand it. But yeah, so I am drinking. I have a craft a six pack from Wegmans, which not the best selection, especially if I'm going by the best buy date on the bottom of my can here, which was December 14th of last year. But I have Sweetwater Brewing Companies, which is in Sweetwater, New Jersey, as far as I understand it. Nope, I'm sorry, it's in Atlanta, Georgia. My mistake. There is a Sweetwater, New Jersey, but I guess they don't brew beer. But this one's in Georgia, and it's their established 420 strain or G13 IPA. I don't know. There's like nine different titles on this thing. The point is, it's in black and white, and there's a little like fish fossil. So I don't know. Seven Samurais in black and white. I'm guessing there's water that farm, even though it's a rice farm. But I'm sure they've had fish at some point, maybe. But who cares? Whatever. To hell with it, as Bob Uecker would say, as on this opening weekend of baseball. But yeah, so it's fine. It's fine. I feel like it might have been better before December 14th, but it's fine. It's got an odd aftertaste, like I'm drinking a Corona straight out of the bottle again. But I don't know. It's not bad the first time it hits you.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm gonna be suffering through that for a little bit. And since they're in Georgia, Atlanta, fuck them because the Braves, all that kind of shit. I don't care. I'm gonna talk shit about them because who gives a shit? But anyway, Mike, how are we pitting these two legendary movies against each other?
All right, so this could have been an easy pit against each other. You could have just gone character for character, but the Magnificent Seven had to go and fuck that up by making their main character a combination of two samurai and then adding a new guy for some goddamn reason.
Good old Robert Vaughn. Good old Robert Vaughn.
So, in terms of like our main, we're going to do the main character, not the exact matchup, because like technically the young lover kind of pairs better with the main character from the Magnificent Seven, but then we don't have someone to match Kikuchio up with. So we're doing Kikuchio versus Chico.
And the dude, and the young guy in the Magnificent Seven, I just love the actor's name because you got a cast of like gigantic, like big dick swingers, and then there's Horst Buchholz as Chico. Now Horst, and like he's fighting a better fight than Yul Brynner is against his accent, but it's that German slips in there every now and then. The Russian, though, proves too strong, and you'll just cannot keep it down the whole movie.
Speaking of Yul Brynner, we will be doing Yul Brynner's character versus Takashi Shimura's character, Kenbei, which they both kind of play the leader of the ragtag group, though not the main character.
And just for fun, we're also going to compare them to Yul Brynner, the character in Cool Runnings, just for fun.
Three, we're gonna do like both movies have like the stoic master, which is one of my favorite tropes, so I want to do that comparison with Kyozo versus Brit, so James Corbin's character versus Seiji Miyaguchi's character.
Good old James Coburn, man. Dude, you may know him as Mr. Waternoose in Monsters, Inc. If you're a certain age, but that dude, I mean, that one, when we get to that pairing and that breakdown, I don't know, man. Just off the bat, I'm on James Coburn's side simply because he's just so damn cool,
That God, we'll do that matchup first because I have opinions on that too.
Okay.
All right, next we're gonna do the bandits. Which bandits do we? We're not just gonna pick a, like include the leader in the bandits.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of have to for Seven Samurai because, as far as I could tell, we don't actually get a name for any of these dudes. We just get bandits. That's all they are. And we don't spend any time with them either, though. We do spend time with the ones in with Calavera's gang in Magnificent Seven.
All right, speaking of the bandits, which plan is better? when they're trying to infiltrate the bandits' base to an extent. The seven samurai go to light it on fire to provoke the bandits to attack the village. Magnificent Senden send in Chico to act like he's one of the bandits to kind of to like, and they just don't notice that there's an extra guy there.
Because he's in like the Captain America Avengers disguise, where like you put on a baseball hat and glasses, and all of a sudden you're not Captain America or Black Widow or whatever. This dude puts a sombrero on, and all of a sudden he's one of the gang.
All right. Next, we got to compare how well each movie juggles having essentially seven kind of main characters.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good one.
I kind of want to throw in which movie has more appropriate ethnic casting.
I mean, if we want to give an easy point to Seven Samurai, then yes, which is
I'm
the movie
trying.
that doesn't need the easy points.
I'm trying to think of how we could bring that up in one of these comparisons because it's hilarious.
We could just, I mean, unfortunately, it is a matter of Akira Kurosawa working with a fully Japanese cast and doing an appropriate Japanese story, whereas Sturgis is dealing with the Hollywood studio system in 1960, which basically wouldn't use anybody that wasn't white or Italian to play anything. And he very much brownwashes a lot of white dudes to play Mexican dudes.
Right, won't include that comparison because it's so clearly.
I mean, this is a studio system that barely wanted to use Bruce Lee in movies simply because of how Asian he was, you know?
All right, next, I want to do pick your favorite action scene from each movie. I don't care which one. Which movie does action better?
That's a good one because that is a true genre comparison, because we are doing samurai movie versus Western. And Magnificent Seven, for what it is a it's a legendary movie. It's a good legendary movie, but it is also, oddly enough, one of the better Westerns out there. But the thing is, it's also one of the more cliche Westerns.
But
So
it broke
it's,
the cliches is the thing.
well, I would argue that it defined them the hardest because the Western had been done before. And, you know, John Wayne was doing Westerns all over the place. And I would say that people were more, probably more introduced to the tropes in with Magnificent Seven. But the ones that were actually used in that movie were established well before in other Western movies. You know, they don't really break any ground in this movie. To the point that when you watch Blazing Saddles, they're making fun of Randolph Scott, a legendary Western actor, and all of the Western tropes. But when you watch Magnificent Seven, there's a hell of a lot of Blazing Saddles in that movie.
Oh, last one. We spend some time with the three villagers that are sent to like kind of recruit in both movies.
Yeah. I would say better, okay, better tryout for getting the job, let's say. So then we could compare the pretty badass hearse ride that goes through the town for the Native American gentleman. And then there's the other one where it's our main samurai pretends to be a monk to flush out a thief who's taken a kid hostage. You know, it's a pretty they're two very intense tryout scenes. You know, it's like the Joker cracking the pool cue and leaving them to do their work, you know?
All right. So we got our categories. We got seven of them. So four takes a win.
Okay. I will say let's do a bonus category, bonus comparison, just right off the bat. Let's do more useless side romantic plot. I'm gonna say right off the bat, it's the Magnificent Seven one
Oh, for
because
sure, because they combine our main character with the young lover, the story doesn't make any goddamn sense at the way it resolves with that love plot.
right. And the only reason it's in the movie is because it was in the original. That's the only reason it's there. And in the original, it at least gives you some conflict in the sense that this woman, this girl is a virgin. She's her father is afraid that the samurais are going to rape her if they find out she's a woman in the first place.
Can we talk
So it
about
makes
how Magnificent Seven, they just hide all the women?
they just take them all, and they we actually kind of sort of see them do that because it's a 3.5 hour movie. We can show that kind of shit. Whereas in Magnificent Seven, it's just like women don't appear until he finds the one, and
Yeah.
then that just opens the can and the rest come out. But at least in Seven Samurai, we get the story of it's almost like Romeo and Juliet forbidden love kind of thing. And it's also a test that kind of shows these farmers are not great people to begin with, because although rightfully so, they pretty much fear all samurai because of the past with their history with samurai. Because so samurai show up, they eat all their food, they rape all their women, and then they just leave. And that's what these guys assume these dudes will do, even though they're being invited to protect them. They just assume that these dudes are going to be, plowing through their women, raping and doing whatever they got to do, and then they'll collect their bounty and, fight off some bandits if they have to. But in Magnificent Seven, it's like, yeah, they think all cowboys or gunslingers are the same way. And it's like, oh, we got to do this because it's in the original movie, but they don't bother to try to make it make sense,
No.
you know? So easy point, Magnificent Seven, right there.
Well, is that really a positive point or we negative point?
Well, I did say more useless subplots, so I guess the point does go to Magnificent Seven in this case, for more pointless romantic subplot.
All right, yeah, that's what brings up the whole issue with like the main character, because he is a like that's the young lover in Seven Samurai. He's meant to see the horrors of battle, choose love over his dream of being a great warrior, where our main character in the Magnificent Seven is like, I'm gonna do both, but both should work.
Yeah, he's the it's Katsuhiro is the young kid in Seven Samurai, and his deal is that he is the son of a samurai family, so but he hasn't been tested or anything. He has no experience as a samurai, and really this is his first test, and he has to essentially see what life is like for samurai out there, or in this case, for Ronin out there. And he gets confronted with love and blah, blah, and he has to make a decision on who he wants to be in life, all that kind of thing.
You know, we really should do Yojimbo versus A Fistful of Dollars.
Or Hidden Fortress versus Star Wars, or it's pretty much every Kurosawa movie can be compared to something else, just like every Tarantino movie can be compared to every Hong Kong action movie, you
Because
know?
I'm like Martin Scorsese says Kurosawa was like who he learned, like watching Kurosawa movies is what is how he learned.
And isn't it The Departed that is has like a direct Hong Kong or
Yeah.
Japanese movie and like allegory? I can't remember what it is, but it's
Is
yeah.
it the raid?
No, it's not The Raid. No, it's what is it? But
We
it's
should do
definitely like,
that
yeah. I mean, yeah, we're filling out the future listings here. Let's see, Japanese. Is it just Japanese version? Oh, that's what it is.
Internal
Infernal
Affairs.
Affairs. That's what it is.
Is it internal or infernal?
Infernal with an F.
Okay.
Infernal. Yeah. So yeah, we can absolutely do that too. But in fact, I'm going to make a note of that. But yeah, and it's everything Kurosawa's done has been aped or bit off of or just straight out adapted, things like that. Of course, if you ask George Lucas, he'll be like, no, Star Wars was my own idea. It's like, yeah, fuck you, dude. It's way too similar to Hidden
Hey,
Fortress.
no. George Lucas did an interview on how much he loves Kurosawa and modeled his work off of.
I thought that his whole deal was everyone points it out and he just goes, yeah, I guess they're similar, but no. It's kind of
I
like
haven't
how.
watched the actual interview. I saw part of an interview where he's like Seven Samurai's my Ian.
I mean, that's fine. You could say that, but that's not what his movies bit off of. There are other Kurosawas. But whereas it's like Tarantino was like, oh yeah, this Hong Kong action movie is Reservoir Dogs. It's like, and everyone's like, and it's funny because all film nerds are like, no, man, he bit this off. And it's like, no, ask the man himself. He'll tell you he literally made that movie an American movie. He has no shame in it. That's all, that's like his whole deal.
All right, so we'll get to Stoic Master. Kyozo versus Brit, so.
James Coburn versus Japanese actor.
Versus,
That's
it's Seiji Miyaguchi.
Iguchi. There you go. Yep. I accidentally closed out the cast list. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, he is Kyozo is the character.
So
And
I lean Kyozo because his introduction in that dueling scene is so damn cool.
it's cool as hell, but the thing is, James Coburn's introduction, it's basically like he's just asleep. He's the baddest one that's there. No one wants to fuck with him except this one dude. And then he just kind of, it's funny because he's just like, he just looks up under his hat, he puts his hat back down, goes back to sleep. The guy shoots at his feet, he doesn't flinch. And then he just gets up, walks over, puts a cup on the fence, and just waits. He's like waiting there. And the guy walks over to the pole, and he's like, call it whatever. And he throws the knife, and it hits the pole next to the guy. Whereas in Seven Samurai, the duel is with wooden sticks, with wooden swords. They both allegedly simultaneously hit each other, and both in both movies, our heroes are like, you lost to the other one. When very clearly, at first look, they did not. You're like, oh, okay, he missed with the knife. They both hit at the same time. What's going on here? But then the real battle, the real duel happens, and it's over before it begins. It's like, oh, this is pretty cool because I think I lean towards Coburn though, because he throws that knife into the dude, A, throws it into his non-heart side and still manages to kill him. And B, he just does that, leaves his knife in the guy, and just kind of walks, grabs his stuff, walks over, takes a little drink, and he's like, oh, hey, Chris. It's
I don't
Chris
know.
from the.
So this might be my bias, but just like a sword fight is, you get the benefit of the choreography of like, oh, he's that much better than that other guy.
Yeah, there is technique. He does display like almost instantly that's like, oh no, this guy's a trained fighter. This isn't gonna end well for that dude. But I mean, it is. I mean, I could honestly go
Also,
either way.
I'm saying Coburn loses points for the most anticlimactic that they could give him.
I mean, yeah, that is true. He does kind of go out like a bit of a bitch, but then again, that's I think the fault of the movie because they have to hit the beats that Seven Samurai hit. So his character doesn't survive Seven Samurai, so he can't survive Magnificent
But they
Seven.
could
So
have
they.
given it's not the most memorable to that, but it's pretty cool because the battle itself is awesome, how Kyozo goes out.
Yeah, he dies in the big battle and all that, but it's like, yeah, they could have. The only one that's more, I don't know, that's more annoying to me in Magnificent Seven, and I'll pull up the dude's name because he needs to be recognized for how hacky he is. Harry Luck, played by Brad Dexter. He's the one that when he's dying, he basically asks Yul Brynner to lie to him. He's like, tell me this was worth more than just protecting people. And Brenner's like, oh yeah, man, there's gold all over. There's so much gold. So much gold. You know, you'd have been multi-millionaire. It was all for the gold. And Rowan, he's like, oh, that sounds great. I can die now. It's like, wow. What an awful way to die.
That kind of reminded me of the white, there's a Whitest Kids You Know skit where it's like they're like acting like they're in trench warfare, and one guy gets shot and like just has like the most dramatic death, and the other soldiers are making fun of him. They're like, well, he hammed that up a bit, didn't he? And then finally the one guy gets like shot through the head, and like he has a giant hole, and he just looks at the other guy who's alive, and he's like, is it bad? And the guy's like, it's pretty bad. And he's like, okay, I think I'm just gonna go to sleep now. And he's like, you are handling this incredibly well.
Yeah. Whereas the death of like Harry Lux's death in Magnificent Seven is kind of like Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
It's like where he's gonna pretend to be dying and all that. It's like my phone's
Or
so cold.
what's it called? Role models, where the one guy, he's like, slay the king, kill him, go.
Yeah, I mean, I am going with Coburn just because, and this maybe this I don't know this is I don't know if it's a bias or what, but when I'm watching Seven Samurai, while I recognize it's a legendary classic movie and it is too long, I don't really see, and maybe it's a lost in translation thing, I don't know, but subtitles just don't really convey what the true meaning or delivery of the lines would be. But like, I don't see that many different personalities in the seven of the samurai. There's, in my head, there's Toshirô Mifune's character, there's our main character, there's our lead, then there's the stoic samurai guy, and then there's like the Steve McQueen character, who's just kind of like not a happy-go-lucky dude. He's just like a happy dude. He's in good spirits most of the time. And then there's three other dudes, and it's like one of which happens to be the kid, but his only personality trait is that he's a kid, you know. And
But I mean, he's kind of defined by the love story.
which is unfortunate because that's, you know, the trope that is what defines him. Whereas I'm looking at, and then, of course, you know, there's the standard, you know, Westerner bias of them all being Asian and like Japanese and having to be like, okay, that's this guy, that's this guy. Whereas I look at Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, Horst Buchholz, Charles Bronson, Robert Vaughn, Brad Dexter, James Coburn, and then to an extent, even Eli Wallach. I know every single one of those guys looks different, and I know their personalities and I know who they are. And they all have at least one scene where we get to see who they are as a person. And it goes to the point where James Coburn's character is teaching the villagers how to shoot with the gun. And he's showing them how to, like, the 4-point steps of shooting. And you're like, okay, that's this guy. He's the cool dude. He's the gunslinger. Like, he's that. And then you look at the funniest character, I think, in the entire movie, which is Charles Bronson's character.
I love Charles Bronson.
Charles Bronson's awesome, but A, he doesn't sound like Charles Bronson used to sound in the 70s when he was in Death Wish. And then he doesn't have the mustache, and he doesn't look like an old catcher's mitt. So it's not Charles Bronson as far as I'm concerned, but they at least give him the cheesy lines of like he's the one that knows the people. Like he's the one that tells our heroes, hey, while you're eating tortillas and all this stuff, and like all this big meal that they got here, they've been surviving off of tortillas and a little bit of beans, like while we've been here. Whereas in Seven Samurai, we get a random character, not one of our heroes, that says, hey, you know what these farmers live off of so you can have rice? They eat millet. And it's like, oh, okay. But then it's like some dude that's there just to make that point. Whereas in the Magnificent Seven, it's one of our characters that makes that point. So he's one of the team that recognizes it. And that's what gets Harry Luck and Steve McQueen to go out and actually give out their food that they have. And because of that, I kind of side with them more as actual characters because I know what they're doing. Whereas in Seven Samurai, I feel like if I was a native Japanese speaker, these guys might be a little more distinct to me, but they're not because all I'm going by is subtitles, you
That's
know?
yeah, so subtitles does like put up a barrier for the more emotional connection. Now, I will say, Mifune is the best character in either movie, and it's not close.
Because I would also argue he's the best actor in both movie, in
Oh,
either
yeah.
movie. There's a reason why Kurosawa used him in everything. You know, there's a reason why he had the career that he did have. And it's funny because Toshirô Mifune was a gigantic Japanese actor. He was all over the place. But it's the guy who plays Jimada, it's Takashi Shimura, who actually was in a movie that people probably saw over here. He was in the original Godzilla. You know, he was a doc. He was like, I think he was a doctor or scientist in Godzilla. And so that dude, it's like, and you look at that guy, you're like, oh, I swear, I think I've seen that dude in things before. Whereas Mifune, you're like, oh, I've seen him in other Akira Kurosawa movies, you know?
Which I think this is a good, so I lean towards Seven Samurai for the stoic badass. So split point there,
That
calls
one
the
split.
tie.
So right now, our more useless romantic subplot is actually putting the tide in Magnificent Seven's favor.
I think when you word it like that, it should be a negative point, but
True. So yeah, it would be 1-0, I guess.
okay, so now we'll go to the leader. So, Kanbei Shimada versus Yul Brynner.
Chris Adams, played by Yul Brynner, very Russian man, fighting his hardest against that Russian accent. I haven't seen the original Westworld in quite some time. Probably, actually, no, I don't say quite some time. It was probably back when the first season of Westworld came out. I think that's the last time I actually watched it. Yul Brynner's the bad guy in that. But for some reason, I can't remember him actually speaking in that movie, which is a better role for Yul Brynner because he is a very scary looking dude until he has to talk. Now, if he has to talk, he's got that deep kind of like baritone voice. But if he's given more than a couple syllables to say, the Russian accent sneaks out. And it, unless he's playing a Bond villain, it really kind of takes away from this is the all-American Western cowboy man of this movie.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it ain't. No, it fucking ain't, bro.
Was that so? So Shimada is not my favorite character in Seven Samurai, but like I think he serves his purpose way better than Yul Brynner does.
Yeah, because he's a lot more, and again, this is by virtue of having the 3.5 hour runtime. We get more screen time with him, and he is shown being more of a leader and more of a strategist and more of the guy who's been through this, and like
Which is
he
also good because I like the approach of the leader's not necessarily the main character.
and the only thing that I would The only thing that I would give to Yul Brynner is that the relationship between he and Steve McQueen is better than it is between what's his name? Between Shimura and his number two and his old buddy in Seven
That's
Samurai.
weird because like they both have a right-hand man, and then they both have an old buddy that isn't the right-hand man.
Right. And but Steve McQueen is just he's Steve McQueen, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard
Yeah,
to
that's with so like with your main character and the leader, I think Seven Samurai knocks it out of the park on both of them way more than the Magnificent Seven. But because of the language gap, you feel more of a connection of those guys in the middle that like aren't as big of a role.
Yeah, and it does pay to have actors that you recognize in Magnificent Seven and people that and personalities that you know. So while, the irony of that is that the personality of Charles Bronson wouldn't really be established until he did Death Wish. That's where the impression came from, all of that. So people forget that Charles Bronson existed before Death Wish. Like he was in an episode of The Twilight Zone that will blow you away because it'll be a while and then you'll be like, holy shit, that's Charles Bronson. But that's the thing. These are recognizable actors. These are legendary actors. And I'm sure if I was a native Japanese speaker, if I was Japanese, these dudes in Seven Samurai, I'd be like, oh, this is Seiji Miyaguchi, oh shit, Minoru Chiakaki is in here. It's like, oh fuck. It's like Isao Kimura's here. Whoa, I remember that dude. It's like, but that's not the case for me, I recognize Toshirô Mifune because I've seen other Kurosawa movies, and I recognize Shimura because I've seen Godzilla. But I've seen Robert Vaughn, I've seen, Charles Bronson, Steve McQueen, Yul Brynner, all of these dudes. James Coburn, all of these dudes and a ton of other stuff, and like you know who they are. And that's why I think I side more with those. But then again, Mike, there is the bias of Mike is our resident Japanese historian. So
That's
Mike is
correct.
basically one of the seven samurai, whereas I am basically one of the Western dudes trying to oppress the Mexican people.
Listen, I'm not gonna give myself that much credit. Best, I'm one of the Dutch explorers that the samurai agreed to do trade with.
You fucking Shogun? Are you knockoff Tom Hardy from Shogun? Speaking of, I have watched the first episode of Shogun. Very good. I can't seem to stay awake through to see the second one all the way through.
That's wild. The second episode's one of the best episodes.
Well, that's the thing. I think I keep watching it at the wrong time. Like I keep trying to watch it like 11 o'clock when I'm feeding my son. It's like, oh. No, this is just not, it's not the right time for me.
Shout out to Shogun because it actually gets me excited that it's a Tuesday.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's one of those shows that I'm gonna wait until like all the episodes come out, then I'm just like, all right, I'm just gonna watch this. Like,
No,
I don't have
that's.
to wait.
I love it because it gives me a reason to be excited about a day of the week that's objectively dog shit.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
Like, I'm actually going to be depressed when it's over because I'm going to be like, oh, it's just Tuesday again.
Well, on Tuesdays, you can rewatch it. You can rewatch it on Hulu. But Canes are going to try to get you because every time I turn Hulu on, it's like the first thing, continue watching Shogun. It's like, oh, okay. But all right. So I think, and I'm willing to concede the point here to Seven Samurai simply because they're a better leader and character in the movie, whereas Yul Brynner is just a recognizable face that happens to be front and center, and he's just kind of like the guy that's there.
All right. Since we've been talking, so that's what one positive point for Seven Samurai versus one, I don't know, sketchy at best, if we should consider it a point for Magnificent Seven.
One potential point.
Could be negative. I don't know.
But the point is evened out by the fact that I picked Coburn, so it's really one to nothing again. It's a negative point plus a positive, so it's a one to nothing again.
Hey,
We've been through three categories.
but I picked the Seven Samurai Master.
There you go. Yeah, so but it's one nothing because it would have been one to one had the negative point not washed out that one positive
Okay.
point.
All right. So next, since we've pretty much been talking about this already, balancing seven protagonists, which movie do
Magnificent Seven.
I... So
In
I'm
my mind, it's
torn on it
Magnificent Seven.
because I feel like a lot of them, you see them at their introduction, and then they disappear in the middle of the movie for me. Like There's notable absences from some of the coolest characters, only for them to come back in the end and be like, oh, we need to check off if they died in Seven Samurai.
Yeah, but it's in that big. There is that stretch in the middle of the movie where it's kind of like the training montage, like getting the villagers ready for the fight, where they're all there. They're all having an appearance. The only character that really doesn't do anything is Robert Vaughn's character. And that's probably because the filmmakers didn't have a counterpart in Seven Samurai to do anything with. So they just gave this guy the story of he's like gun shy. Like he used to be the best, but now he's like the Waco kid and can't fire his gun kind of thing. But there was no version of that in Seven Samurai, so they didn't think to
So
write anything.
he should have been the Mifune character, and Chico should have just been the young lover character.
It's weird that Robert Vaughn wasn't the Toshirô Mifune character, because the dude is charismatic. He's a good actor. Like, I feel like maybe Robert Vaughn didn't want to look vulnerable, because Toshirô Mifune's character has to be vulnerable. He has to be really vulnerable a lot of times, because he's pretending to be a samurai, and he's pretending to not just be a farmer who wants to not be a far from a farm family anymore, and he wants to prove himself. But he's such kind of a prick that he doesn't know how to do it the right way.
So
And
he's weird because, like, when they meet the villagers, he is like the biggest, he wants to help them, but he's also the biggest critic of them.
yeah, and that's because of his history as a farmer and all this stuff, and his history with the samurai and everything. Well, Robert Vaughn's character is kind of like, he's almost as if he's in his own little world. Like he's in his own story for the majority of the movie until the very end when he finally fires his gun and gets shot. You know, it's like, okay, what were we doing here? Like, what was the real purpose of this guy? It's not like he falls in love with the girl. He doesn't help anybody really train. He's just kind of along for the ride, and
Yeah,
he's
no,
there in
you
case
want
they
him to
need it.
be the Mifune character. You gotta
Yeah.
have him be like he wanted to be a Texas Ranger. He couldn't cut it.
Yeah, and then he became the Waco kid, you know. It's, but then of course there's the Harry Luck character, who we understand is kind of just there for the money. He's there. He's not really taking any of this seriously. He'll cut and run if given the opportunity. But then he's guilted. Basically, his guilt and his conscience is like, no, I can't just do this. I gave my word. I have to come back. I have to fight. And then there's Steve McQueen, who's like, you know what? This is my life. This is kind of what I do. I go from town to town and I make a little couple bucks here and there helping people, and then I move on. Yul Brynner knows the game. He knows the score. He knows that at the end of this, he's not going to be hailed as a hero. He's just going to be like, okay, you did your job. You can peace out now. And then there's Bronson and Coburn's characters. Bronson, who legitimately gives a shit about like the kids that are kind of like tasked. I do love the fact that the kids that are constantly with him were chosen to be with him by the villagers, and the reason being is so they can avenge his death, or they can be the ones that speak at his funeral in case no one else is there. I was like, wow, that
Yeah,
is such a weird thing to do. For people that are here to help you.
so I will concede this to Magnificent Seven, but I'm not sure it's actually that accurate. I think it might be a language barrier thing for us.
I think it is, but also in Magnificent Seven, there's three other randos that are just kind of like taking orders every now and then. They're just kind of there, you know? They don't really do much, whereas every one of our seven in Magnificent Seven, we know who they are and what they're doing. We know their character, and we know we get some not significant screen time, but we get enough screen time with them doing their thing to get a feel for their personalities and get a feel for what drives them.
It's kind of like with the Lakers versus the 04 Celtics, where the Lakers got they got talent at the top, but I'm sorry, the 04 Pistons. The Lakers got the talent at the top, but the Pistons, like, everyone just kind of does their role.
Yeah, it's Showtime Lakers versus, you know, Isaiah Thomas and all of his pre-fame Dennis Rodman dudes and his bullies and backbreakers and all that. But yeah, I mean, it's and that's the thing. Again, it's ironic because Seven Samurai is 3.5 hours long, and the first hour of the movie is spent with these farmers essentially just crying for an hour because they're too poor to pay for anything. And they happen to luck into seeing a samurai doing his job, like protecting somebody. And then from there, the doors open and the movie can begin. But then at that point, we still have 2.5 hours left, you know? And it's like, okay, now the actual movie starts. But with Magnificent Seven, even though it is still almost 2.5 hours long, all of that shit's cut out. And what we get is, and this is probably a good segue into the next one as well, what we do get is a good introduction to our main characters and then a getting the team together montage almost. And then we're into it. And then we're into training these villagers and whatever. It does get to the point a lot faster.
All
So
right. So I'll concede that one for Magnificent Seven. So we're looking at basically a tie right now.
yeah. And then so I guess the next one is who has a better
Tryout.
introduction?
Like,
What?
yeah. The tryout, the introduction.
Better tryout. Yeah. So who has a better tryout? Is it
It's
Seven Samurai?
Mifune pretending to be the monk.
Is that no, Mifune is not pretending to be the monk.
Oh, no.
It's what's his name? It's Shimura. It's
Yeah.
Kanbei Shimada. It's Shimada
Yeah.
pretends to be the monk. That's a great one. Now, while that is a great, like, shave my head, give me your robes, I'm gonna go give him some rice balls, and then I'm gonna slice him up when I run in there, off camera, mind you. He's gonna come running out and die on his feet. And I'm gonna walk out heroically holding this kid. I don't know though. In Magnificent Seven, Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen volunteer to take a hearse carrying a dead Native American to a white graveyard. And they're gonna bury him in that graveyard, whether or not it kills them or the people that are trying to stop him. And they get on this hearse and McQueen is literally shotgun. He's riding shotgun with the shotgun. And he's looking at the people that are waiting to stop him from moving this hearse through the town. And the whole time, it's like they're casually talking to each other. It's like, oh, you do this much? Like, blah, 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 you know? And then it's like while he's aiming all that. And then Yul Brynner does the whole like lightning hands, like Waco kid bit and shoots the guns out of the two dudes' hands, like as they're waiting at the gate of the cemetery. And then there's a bit of a tense standoff, and these dudes are kind of like, I guess we're defeated. We're gonna move out of the way and let you bury this dude, which is funny because the second they leave, nobody's stopping them from digging that corpse back up and just fucking throwing it down the hill, you know?
All right, so this is my bias, but hand-to-hand in sword fighting, I just find so much more compelling than like Waco Kid style gun shooting.
But for our monk, we don't see that on camera, though. We just see great, of course, it's more artistic, but we just see the bloody sword that he's holding and the dude falling over after running out and realizing, I think, that he's dead, you know?
I'm torn on this one.
Yeah, I'm as well. This might have to be another split.
I think it's a split.
Another split. All right. So it was a good break. How's your whiskey?
Okay, so as I drink it more, I tend to favor the Fuji whiskey because it tastes more like Japanese whiskey to me. Different whiskeys from different regions. There's like a generic flavor that you get from specific regions.
Okay.
And the Fuji kind of fits that mold and does it really well for the Japanese whiskey. It's very flavorful, it's crisp, and it's smooth. Where the Kayo, Mizunara cask, it gives it more of an American whiskey taste, which oddly enough, American whiskey is on the lower end of my tiers for what my favorite wh type of whiskey is. As is not. It's like more, my favorites are Scotch and Japanese than American, but
Mike
Well,
famously
American
hates
and
America.
Irish.
Yeah, Mike hates America. That's why. It's well known.
Listen, bourbon's great, but I feel like a bad bourbon compared to like a bad scotch, the bad scotch, I would absolutely rather drink.
Sounds about right. But
That's like I like there's specific bourbons I love, but just bottle to bottle, there's bourbons that I'm just like, I don't think I would drink that again.
that sounds about right.
And then
And
Tennessee whiskeys, don't even get me started. I think Jack Daniels is the most disgusting whiskey you can possibly drink.
don't tell that to our real American listeners, Mike. You people in Tennessee are all right. With
Listen,
me,
there
I
are
hate
good Tennessee whiskeys, but if you think Jack Daniels is a good whiskey, I don't even want you listening to the podcast, if I'm being honest.
it. That's Mike. That's Mike saying that. You can find him and kill him. You can storm his capital. If you don't want to listen to us, that's fine. But if you want to fuck ghosts, talk to me first and
That
then you can quit listening.
is the if you like Jack Daniels and are also a spectrophile, I can overlook the Jack Daniels.
There are tiers. Our grades.
Well, you gotta listen, if you like Jack Daniels, you gotta bring something interesting to the table for me to
Yeah, you
want
gotta
you to
replace
still
it.
be at the table.
Gotta replace it. All right, so my G13 IPA by Sweetwater is fine. It's just fine. But all right, so what's next?
All right, so I think I want to get into the action. Which movie just does action better?
Yeah,
It's Seven Samurai. It's
it is, but yeah, is the point we'll go to Seven Samurai ultimately, but they both do suffer from, and it's not their fault, it's just what they were working with. They do suffer from being made in a time of movies where close-up action wasn't really a thing. And showing like actual blades cut into people or gunshots actually connect with blood with squibs or anything like that, that just wasn't done. It's not the style of filmmaking at the time. But there is a lot of I cut you, you fall, or I shot you fall kind of thing. Like it's like the honor system of death, you know?
Now. One, so Seven Samurai, the thing that impresses me so much with that movie is I felt like with all the preparations, with the maps they show, that battlefield, I knew what was going on. I'm watching this massive battle. I know where he is. I know where he is. I know where he is. I know the battlefield. I know where my main characters are. And then the choreography is amazing for the time.
Yeah, I mean it is. And unfortunately, Magnificent Seven does suffer from that Western choreography where it's gunshot happens, dude falls over, he clutches the chest and falls over. And it's simply because these movies had to be cheap to make to a certain extent. So like you couldn't spend any money on special effects, and there just wasn't special effects for that. It was like blank gets fired out of a gun. Let's fall. This guy falls, is supposed to be the victim, and he falls over. You know, it's very basic because, and this is why I think Westerns are my least favorite genre of movies, because these shootouts and whatnot are not compelling to me because it's just a matter of like, it's like boy, it's like little kids playing cowboys, you know, in the backyard. Like, oh, I shot you. Ooh, I fall down. You
That
know, it's.
that's my one exception to that is True Grit, where he puts the what's it, the reins in his mouth for the horse and pulls both of his pistols so he could shoot as he's riding and using
Is that the original True Grit or the remake?
both. Well, I love the remake's a better movie than the original. I will die on that hill.
I don't think I've seen the original. But again, like if it's the remake, that's a modern remake. So they're definitely gonna show it better. Whereas the
I've seen the
original.
original though, but I'm like that's just a cool sequence, or he's like
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, that's cool, but like ultimately on the other end of it, it's like people just grabbing their chests and falling over. That's kind of, it's like whether they fall on the dirt or they fall into like a horse trough, like, or they fall over a low rock fan, like a low rock wall. Like that's really all Westerns ever have to offer when it comes to that shit. And at least with Seven Samurai, you do get a couple arrows in the back. You do get a burning brothel where dudes are getting cut down outside of it. You know, it's, there is a lot of good samurai action.
Kurosawa knows how to knew how to frame an action set piece.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's, man, Seven Samurai absolutely does that better, because then there's even like the hand-to-hand stuff when it's one-on-one. Even that's crafted in a certain way that you feel the tension rise, where you feel everything. And then when the action does happen, even if it is over before you thought it would be, you're still involved. You're like, oh shit, that dude just got cut in half. You know, it's, and then he, of course, they can't show him being split in half, but he's deader than dead, and now he like doesn't know it. Oh, his body just realized it, and now he
Which is
falls, you
like,
know?
I love the meme where it's like the anime sword meme where like you draw your like you pull your sword out real quick and put it back in the sheath, and then it just shows something get cut.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, again, it's like Blazing Saddles with the way, okay, where he shoots six different people, but all you see him do is flinch. And all of a sudden, all their guns are flying out of their hands. But yeah, and that's that, like, that's a way to do a compelling action scene in a Western, ironically enough, in the parody of a Western. But
Yeah, that's like, oh, like, well, actually, I think my favorite version, again, it's kind of a modern Western with the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. That's where
the Coen brothers,
what?
the Coen brothers movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where like every time he's about to get into a duel, he's like, you want to count or and then the guy comes in to challenge him and he hits him with I guess spoiler alert for the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, but he the guy comes to challenge him and he hits him with the question that Buster Scruggs usually asks and gets him right in the forehead with the quick draw.
Right. Yeah, so like stuff like that is better, but what we see in Magnificent Seven is a lot of like bang bang, ugh, fall over. You know? Even our main characters go out like that, and it's like, oh really? Like really? Like Charles Bronson is shot from off screen in the gut, and all he does is hold his stomach, pitch over, talk to the kids for a minute or two, and then die. You know? It's like Robert Vaughn's character, I think, gets shot well off camera, and he's like, next time we see him, he's like holding his chest, and then he falls. And it's like, well, why do I care about any of this? Like, none of this is exciting to watch. Whereas all of our main characters in Seven Samurai are all cut down or shot, you know, by the one musket, the couple muskets that the bandit do have, and it's a lot more compelling. So yeah, the action is obviously Seven Samurai.
All right. So our bandit clans.
Magnificent Seven, because
Yeah.
we actually get
This is
characters.
the first one where I'm like wholeheartedly like, yeah, Magnificent Seven gets this.
We actually get characters. We get Eli Wallach's Calavera. We get a couple supporting dudes in that. We know who our bandits are, and our outlaws are. Whereas in Seven Samurai, it's just, okay, we got fodder, we got samurai fodder at the end, and these dudes are just dead meat showing up. Even our main bad guys, like, you only know him by his helmet. You know, we don't even know who he is or what he wants. We just know that every year he does this to them, you know? And at least in Magnificent Seven, the motivation for Calavera is that it's protection money. It's bribery. It's pay me or we'll kill you kind of thing. And he even says it. He's like, with them, I give them one decision: do what I say or else. And with you, it's too many choices. Too many choices. Like, I offer one choice: do what I say, and that's it. You know? And life's easy that way. But so you really do get kind of like a mustache twirling villain. And in Seven Samurai, we don't get that. And it's not even a matter of lost in translation. You simply don't get that. You know, the bandits are just faceless bandits, really, at the end. You know, they're just dudes that raid the village and are cut down. That's it.
Yeah, that's fair. It's hard to compare them because, again, for some reason they hardly get the focus in the like they're just an obstacle.
It's almost as if Kurosawa was like making the movie, and someone was like, dude, you have to have the actual villains at some point. And he was
Yeah.
like, oh, fuck, I do, don't I?
Which is
Like,
pretty much what I did on this because I really, if I was being smart about the order we're doing this, I was like, I would have done that before the action comparison.
I mean, but the action, like again, like the sword fodder at the end, I suppose the cannon fodder, like the sword fodder at the end of Seven Samurai, these dudes are there to get cut down and they're there to die in a fairly cool way. Whereas at least the bandits and the banditos in Magnificent Seven, you do get some motivation from these guys, you do get some characterization from them. So when they do die, most of these guys are like, all right, these guys are all dead. But the only thing is, and this is a point that it's something that Magnificent Seven does wrong or doesn't do right. It's when Eli Wallach's character dies, he just kind of gets shot and he sits down and he's like, why are you doing this? And then Yul Brynner stares him down, doesn't give him an answer, and then he just dies. And you're like, what? Wait, no. You gotta tell him. So you gotta hit him with a great, like, good guy line, or you gotta be like, because it's there, and shoot him in the head. Like, you gotta do something here, man. You can't just let him. Oh, he almost dies. Eli Wallach's face, he almost dies as if someone was like, now you die. And he was like confused because he never got the response to his question. And it was like, I guess I gotta die. And then he just kind of dies.
All right, I'm trying to tally the points in my head, and I'm like, wait, we split so many.
All right, so let's go back over the categories.
Okay. The love interest. Are we counting that as a positive or a negative point?
It's a negative point for Magnificent Seven.
Negative point. Okay. So
So
then we
zero to
split.
negative one.
So we split the master.
Which makes it 1-0 Seven Samurai.
We split the or no. No, then we go to the leader. That goes to Seven Samurai.
2-0.
We split the tryouts.
3-1.
Seven Sam or Magnificent Seven. Won the balancing the seven.
3-2.
Magnificent Seven won the bad guys.
Tied up 3-3.
Seven Samurai won the action.
4-3.
All right, I think that was it.
So 4-3, Seven Samurai wins. If we
Well, now we have our main characters.
All right. Okay. So
It's Mifune, right? Like, are we debating this?
I mean, we kind of have to. I feel like I'm gonna end up on Mifune's side simply because he has a fully realized arc. He starts off as like a psychotic drunk and a goofball that they do not take
And then
seriously.
when he's given the floor, he's so compelling and
He is that.
charismatic and
It's his drunken speech about why samurai are bad, basically, or why he doesn't trust samurai, but also why he thinks farmers are weak people and can't be trusted either. That little monologue right there is just so good, and it's so well delivered.
And he
And
gets the ending of a samurai's, he gets the samurai's death, the samurai's funeral. Like, his ending is perfect for the film. Where I look at our main character in the Magnificent Seven, and I'm like, they're combining two characters that just have mutually exclusive endings, and it doesn't work.
well, the thing is, A, we can't not mention the fact that Tenshiro Mifune dies with his asshole hanging out. The dude is wearing the shortest armor I've ever seen the entire time, and his damn near his entire asshole is on display when he dies. And he does look like he forgot to wear his pants, and for most of the movie. Now, on the other hand, though, Steve McQueen and Yul Brynner, unfortunately, for the sake of this argument, they do suffer from having leading man syndrome in a 1960s studio movie. Those dudes weren't going to die no matter what happened. The only way
And
those
then
characters die.
Chico's your main. You have all these people, and Chico is technically your protagonist.
Yeah, the only way that those dudes were going to die is if there was an actual death on the set, filming the movies. It's the only way those characters are going to die. And because someone
Unless
had to
they're
survive.
like the like they die to save literally everyone.
Exactly. And since that didn't happen in the original, that can't happen in this one. And
It's
so
like, yeah,
our.
the only way you get one of them to die is they go out as like a one-man army, taking out everyone. All the bad guys are dead. They're still standing, and then they collapse after everyone else is dead.
And or, in this case, Steve McQueen and Yul Brynner are like back to back with their guns. They're cutting down enemies, but there's just too many of them. And they finally get overwhelmed at the very end when it's down to like their last bullet each and they die off camera, that kind of thing. But it's
With like with piles of bodies around them because they were that
right.
much better than everyone else.
Right. It's just the numbers overwhelmed them. It's sheer numbers. Had they not run out of bullets, they would have killed them all, But it is definitely got to be Mifune simply because
Chico is.
he's an actual, like, he's a fully realized character that they do place most of the movie on. Granted, is he one of the ones that walks off into the sunset at the end? No.
But
But
he
that's by
gets
design.
a hero's death.
He does get a hero. He gets a full redemption. And there is no character like that in the Magnificent Seven movie because Robert Vaughn took his place, basically. And they made Chico have his beginning tendencies of following the group and not being taken seriously. But yeah, I would say at the end, it is definitely, it's Magnificent Seven at the end there.
Seven Samurai.
I mean, Seven Samurai. Yeah, sorry, sorry. Yeah, Toshirô Mifune, Seven Samurai, definitely at the end there. But all right, so I think that makes it a 2-point victory.
5-3.
5-3. So that's 2-point victory. 5-4 if we somehow give the negative point to as a positive to Magnificent Seven, but it's still one. Yeah, Seven Samurai.
One more point, one more quick point we're going to give to Seven Samurai. Which movie aged better?
And it's. That is simply for the fact that it is Kurosawa, black and white, and a period piece in feudal Japan. Whereas
With
Magnificent
no
Seven,
brownwashing.
brownwashes a couple hundred Italian dudes to become Mexican, and it's rough. It's tough to watch. It really is. It's tough to watch because that's what they did. The studio system back then was so awful when it came to shit like that they had the entire country of Mexico to pull from, and yet they felt the need to take a bunch of white dudes and give them a spray tan and say, "Hey, we got Mexicans here. We have Eli Wallach, famous non-Mexican, playing a Mexican bandit, and it's just all wrong. It's just all wrong."
That now, those issues aside, I feel like I came off as if I was hating on the Magnificent Seven. I just love Seven Samurai, really. I think the Magnificent Seven is one of the better westerns I've watched.
Oh yeah, it is absolutely. But my problem, and so again, Seven Samurai is a legend and it's a classic, and you have to see it. You really do. But it is, even by today's standards, it's too long because it takes too long to actually get started.
There's a lot of barriers of entry for a Western audience on Seven Samurai. 3.5 hours, black and white, fully in Japanese.
Yeah, and taking the first hour of basically just showing us sad Japanese farmers crying. That's really all we're getting there. And we get those two like caricatures of like wrong, like the bar fight drunks, basically, with the dude with the unibrow and the bad beard, like fake beard. Like those dudes, I guess, are supposed to be entertaining to Japanese speakers, but to me, I was like, come on, get on with it. Let's stop with the misery porn here. What are we doing?
That's I read manga, and one of the mangas I was reading, a character's like powers, his powers was called the comedian. So basically, anything that he thinks is funny, he can basically manipulate the universe as long as he thinks it's funny.
Okay.
And he does that in a chapter, and it's all very Japanese humor and like Japanese puns and Japanese wordplay. And I'm like, I don't get any of this.
What's happening? Why? Why? But that's kind of the first hour of Seven Samurai. It's like, what are we doing? Like, this could be 10 minutes. You know, what are we doing? Why does this have to be 3.5 hours, Akira? What's the matter with you? Why do you hate us? And then there's a lot of stuff in the middle that take like the whole sub romantic subplot takes too fucking long. We spent a lot of time at the end investigating the father of that chick because he beats her after finding out she lost her virginity. And we take a lot of time to talk about why that's culturally significant for this farmer. And it's like, dude, I get it. We have been here for 3 hours and 20 minutes at this point. You can speed things up. You don't need to keep beating me over the head with this shit, Akira. Come on, what are we doing here? And you know, but again, eventually, if you can watch Seven Samurai on like 1.5 speed, do that for like the first hour of the movie, then watch on normal speed for the next hour and a half to 2 hours, and then you can just blitz through the end because all it really is just, you know, killing a bunch of bandits and then we're done, you know? So like the meat of your movie is probably the middle 2.5 hours or so, middle 2 hours, I'd say. And that's really the most important. It's also the most compelling part, you know? It's where a lot of the character work's done, a lot of the good action is, and at the end we're really just wasting nameless bandits, and that's it.
You know, Ross, I don't know why I thought of this. Ross watches anime. I have to make you watch Mashle, Muscles, and Magic.
What the fuck is that?
So, guy is born without magic. He's raised by like a dude in the forest. World exists where anyone without magic is basically killed. And so, in order to kind of cover up for that, his adoptive father just tells him he has to work out all the time. And by the time he's like 15, the guy basically is doing magic just because he's so strong that he's like
Okay.
they have like a thing where they're making fun of like Quidditch from Harry Potter, and he's like, how is he flying on that broom? And you just look at him kicking, and he's creating enough of an air current that he's flying.
Interesting.
And the whole time it's like you don't like when anime explains powers and stuff when they're fighting.
Hate it. I absolutely hate it.
So the entire time it's like he gets into fights with people and they start to explain their powers and then he punches them in the face.
Yes, good. That's my kind of anime right there. It's like, well, he's doing the blood. No, punch in the face. That's it. Punch him in the face.
That's how he beats everyone. He's just like quicker than they can use magic, and he punches them in the face.
There you go. That's all you need to do. All right. Cool. So, win Seven Samurai. Closer than it initially would have appeared, but
So Seven Samurai ages a lot better than Magnificent Seven, but if you can remove the issues of casting from the 60s and accept like the whole it's that time period, it's ugly, but if you're gonna review movies from that time period, you kind of have to remove that.
yeah, it's There's a lot of shit, you know. I mean, it's the reason why they're saying, oh, it was a different time, exists,
John
you know.
Wayne
It's
played Genghis Khan. It wasn't right. It was the 50s.
exactly. It was literally a different time, and had they tried to be diverse, it would have been bad. You know, it would have been real fucking bad
So,
because the
like,
abuse
wait,
would have
it's
been horrendous.
important to acknowledge that that's an issue, but also you gotta review the movie as a movie.
Yeah, you can't retrofit 2024 eyes onto a movie from 1960. It's not gonna go well, you know, and that's why we didn't do it. So, Seven Samurai wins this one. Mike, so we'll talk about what we're doing probably for about the next month. The next month has a very specific theme to movies that are basically the same. But where can people find us on the internet?
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Overcast, and just about anywhere else you get your podcast from. Thanks to Spotify Podcast. You also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Happy Hour Films Podcast.
Perfect. Now, for the next 4 weeks, we are doing movies that are basically the same, but in this case, we are doing shot for shot remakes of movies. Now we have four picked, two of which we've already talked about, but we get to talk about the classic versions of them or the remake versions of them in some cases. But next week, we're going to talk about two genuinely disturbing movies, and one of which, the newer one, you're like, oh, these have people I know. And the original, you're like, oh God, this is just a fucked up movie. So, but the first one, I believe, if I remember correctly, it's also the same director that did both of them. So this director remade his own movie as a shot for shot remake. So that's
He's like,
Funny
I got a
Games.
budget now.
Right, exactly. And I have name actors for Hollywood. We have Funny Games from 1997 and Funny Games from 10 years later in 2007. Now, the second Funny Games it stars Michael Pitt, I believe, is one. You may remember him from things that happened in the early.
It is the same director.
Yes, same actor. So Michael Pitt, you may remember from things that happened in the late 2000s, early 2010s. He was in a lot of stuff back then. Not so much anymore. But at least in that movie, we get Naomi Watts, Tim Roth. We get, like I said, Michael Pitt. And then we get a couple other fairly recognizable actors. But in the 1997 one, we do get someone named Suzanne Lothar. We get Ulrich Mu, Arno Frisch,
Wait,
Frank
the mom
Gehring.
from Holes is in the 2007 one.
Yeah. We get Doris Kuntzman, you know, and all of these other non-American people, because I believe it is a German production. But yeah, but the original is a very disturbing movie. And they redid it in 2007 because everything was getting remade in 2007. In fact, the movie that we're going to talk about the week after that was made in 2006. So there's a few different there's a very specific time period that kind of takes place for this next month. But next week we're going to specifically be doing the shot for shot remakes of Funny Games. So until that time, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McGuigan.
And we'll see you guys next time. So long.